This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The air is a little clearer today. I think sometimes in the midst of our practice, we find ourselves wondering if what we're encountering well, we say practice and verification as an inseparable dynamic. So I think sometimes we find ourselves wondering, do I have enough verification? Is it enough? I think that's okay as long as we don't get confused by that question. As long as we see that a duality like that is tends to be imprisoning. So if we spend time in our practice, looking for some sign that that we can label, oh, that means it's enough. And now I can relax and feel like a real Zen person. But then there might come a day where, oh wait, now I don't feel like that anymore. Well, now what do I do? I better go sit Sesshin so I can feel like that again. And that might work. Or you might have one of those Sesshin where you feel like, oh no, that didn't work at all. I better do another session. So the kind of verification that Dogen talks about isn't that kind. Now from that point of view, we're forever, pretty much, going to be practicing to arrive at verification. And I don't know, maybe some people feel like that they really have to do that. It's like, well, okay. I want to suggest that that's not necessary. That to approach practice with a kind of a agenda like that is limiting. And one of the challenges of the practice of Zazen is to accept the way that it's actually limitless. I think we're not so at ease with limitlessness. We like to have signposts and road markers and so on. If instead we find ourselves in an immense land where you can't see boundaries, and what you thought was landmarks seem to move around, well, it may make us uneasy. And then we'll feel like, no, I got to go back to the ranger station and get a map. Otherwise, I might get lost out there. There's a kind of lostness that is a tremendous gift given to everyone. It's quite okay to, you know, take our seat in the meditation hall or wherever we are, and be lost. In the midst of the phenomena of life. This body-mind is, so to speak, kind of is designed to bear witness to life. And that's happening every moment. And in our practice of Zazen, it's a remarkable opportunity just to sit and enjoy that. And if the question occurs to you, you know, if it occurs to you to wonder and to worry, is it enough? It's okay to let that subside. Now, some people say, well, wait, what about effort? Zen is supposed to take great effort. And that's true, but the effort is not to be led astray by our various concerns. To let the mind be the mind. The body be the body. To let the self be the self. There is a tremendous amount to learn in so doing. And there's this this old Zen saying, you know, I can't remember who came up with it, but you know, one of those Zen guys or gals. Maybe you've heard it before. It's, if you have a staff, I'll give you a staff. If you have no staff, I'll take your staff away. Good old Zen paradox there. The function of the teaching is something like that. You know, in the course of our practice, I think we all experience that. If you have something, you know, you can consult the teacher and say, "Oh, teacher, I have something here." The teacher then typically will say, "Okay, how about this? Here's this. What about that?" And if instead you consult the teacher and say, you know, complain as ancestor Dongshan did to his teacher that he didn't have the eyes of practice. So if you tell the teacher, if you tell Buddha, or whoever, "Oh, I have nothing, and I've practiced so hard, and I have nothing." then a good teacher will take that away from you. And maybe congratulate you if indeed you have nothing. So, in other words, a staff is something you lean on. Right? So, if you're leaning on something, and whether that something is called, this is really great, or, oh, this is nothing at all, the teaching will take that away from us, or change our relationship, so that we're not hanging on to it anymore. So instead of, oh, I have to lean on this staff I've found, Buddha will tell us, no, you don't need to depend on that. And if instead we say, oh, I'm impoverished, I have nothing, my practice doesn't work, Buddha will tell us, don't be silly, just look. So the posture to from which to observe what I'm talking about is one of poise. Everybody, I'm sure, encounters this. To find that poise which is neither too tense or too relaxed, so that the body mind is positioned, so to speak, we sometimes say, at the source. So recently, someone quoted a 20th century Zen teacher who said, you know, if you're really practicing just sitting, after half an hour, you'll need a shower because you're all sweaty. And I have to say, I'm not like that. That is too tense. On the other hand, if you're kind of slumped over and falling asleep, that's too loose. If you were, you know, I don't know, standing on a hill watching for the sunrise, you'd be a little alert. So we're going to have our retreat in a couple of weeks, and you're all invited, and I invite you not to sweat. You know. But to allow your body mind to be poised. Sometimes the analogy is, if you're a naturalist and you're out in the forest and you want to see some creatures, you're very still. and they will come to you. So I have a little poem, if I may share it with you. Let's see. At one mountain temple, dawn steals over the land. A bird calls three times and falls silent. At Huangmei, the fifth ancestor strikes the stone mortar thrice with the staff of ages. The finest gifts are the ones that are not sought after. Whether you have a staff or have no staff, please leave your baggage behind. Do you have some question, Jay?
Well, recently a Zen teacher said to me that we should be practicing more, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
Not just sitting, but also paying more attention to our speech, our actions.
Mm.
Pretty much everything.
Uh-huh.
But in reality, it's just not so easy.
Right.
I mean, to me at least. So I'm wondering if you have a few encouraging words to keep the internal posture upright in relation to so much external chaos happening from world politics, the current violence, and fire and all that. It's just so fatiguing and so discouraging.
Mm.
External, the impact, the internal posture, and so I wonder if you have your words to say.
Well, I don't know. I allow those circumstances to remind me of practice. So when I encounter difficulty, there's a little, I don't know, bell or something that says, oh, now's the time. So in a way, in that sense, I find those difficult phenomena and circumstances helpful in that sense, because that little bell rings. And I imagine that's so for everyone. So if we develop the, reflex that when confronted with some difficulty, we think practice, then that's a very full practice agenda, a very full menu. There aren't any tricks, really. If we don't let the actual phenomena of our life draw us or call us back to practice, then it's going to be much more difficult. So I would say don't look for anything special, but that sense of, oh, this is difficult, or oh, this is sad, or I don't know what to do, all of those ring that little bell. It's like, oh, okay. Now, be completely present. Does someone need something? Can I help? This is practice. And it's supported by Zazen. In Zazen, you start to become very sensitive to that bell. And once the sound of that bell is extremely familiar, then everything will be like a call to practice. So I don't know if that's what you had in mind, but did the person you were speaking with have other recommendations?
Very similar. Sitting with so much noise, you know, sitting with whatever, that is warm zazen.
Yeah.
There's nothing special, just sitting with it, and then so much internal spinning and looping.
Right, and another way to say it is that bell summons us to presence. Right? Be completely here with whatever it is. And that's a very powerful practice.
Mm-hmm. I was recently thinking about practice in kind of similar terms as you were describing with signposts.
With
signposts. Not in those terms exactly, but just that there are things that come up that either I notice, like, oh, this was a good reaction, and I feel like practice has matured in a way that my reaction is beneficial instead of selfish or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there are other times when it's the opposite and can be discouraging, but. But just taking all of that just as it is and just noticing.
Mm-hmm.
But it struck me that kind of anything can be a signpost, or there are signposts everywhere.
Right.
But maybe it depends on how you take them or use them.
Well, it helps if you've heard about practice, if you've heard about the Buddha way, and if you have your body is somewhat familiar with taking the seat in stillness. This will help enormously. So, you know, when we had those reactions, either, oh, now my practice is really good, or, oh, now I'm very discouraged, that's like the staff. So it'd be good not to lean on that and just let that go. And, you know, start from zero all over again. You know, bring complete presence to whatever's happening. Okay. Yeah.
Do you think complete presence is something you're consciously aware of, or can it happen without some, you know, sort of self-reflecting kind of a action?
Right, yes. For instance, if, you know, we're out in the street or something, and something startles us, that there's unmediated instant presence there. So, no, it doesn't require necessarily some self-reflective moment, but that's okay too if that happens. So yeah, it's an innate and immediate capacity that we have. Everybody. Okay. Please stay for tea if you can. Thank you very much.